Hare Krishna. So as every year, we are celebrating again the appearance of Krishna as Vamana Dev, the dwarf Brahmana. Actually, Vamana Dev is a very important avatar. The Bhagavatam gives some 6-7 chapters dedicated to him. So that means about 2% of the old Bhagavatam. And of course, he's mentioned in many other cantos where the list of avatars are there. He's very famous also in India in the famous song, the Dasha Avatara, which you were actually singing. And you saw the translation, which is very famous all over India. Those who are familiar with the Bharatanatyam dance is one of the classic performances, the Dasha Avatar. The dancer mimics all the 10 avatars, and Vamana Deva is always there. There are temples in India, especially in South India, completely dedicated to him. He's mentioned also in the Mahabharata, the Vishnu Sahasranam. Lord Bhishma Deva, he speaks the Vishnu Sahasranam, the 1,000 names of Vishnu. And he speaks also about Vamana Dev. Upendro Vamana Pram Shur Amoga Suchir. What's that? Amoga Suchir. Anyway, I forgot one name. Atindra Sangraha Sargho Dhratatma Niyamo Yamaha. So these are all names of Vamana Dev. Upendra. Upendra means the younger brother of Indra. They are brothers actually. The whole story starts when Bali Maharaj, the king of the demons, was actually dead. He had been killed in the fight with the Devatas. But the very expert, Shukracharya, he revived him. He resurrected him through special mantras, through special procedures. So therefore, Bali Maharaj became very obliged. And he became his disciples. And then the Brahmanas, descendants of Bhrigu Muni, engage Bali Maharaj in a very special sacrifice, which is called the Vishvajit Yajna. Vishva means universe, and Jit means to conquer. So it was a Yajna to enable Bali Maharaj and his dynasty to conquer the universe. So at one point, the final homa, the final offering of ghee, from the flames came out one chariot, some horses, some yellow horses, came a flag with a lion, came a bow, and two quivers full of arrows. So, equipped with these mystical weapons, Bali Maharaj attacked Indrapuri, the residence of the king of heaven, Indradeva, who previously had defeated Bali Maharaj. But this time, Bali Maharaj was especially empowered. And so when Indra went to his guru, Brihaspati, to ask what to do, the demons are attacking the capital, Brihaspati told him that you cannot do anything. Better you leave. And so Indra and the demigods escaped Indrapuri, and Bali Maharaj took over. So he became basically the king of the universe. And for Kshatriyas, it's legitimate. You conquer a kingdom. You're stronger, you conquer a kingdom. And Indra couldn't do anything. So then the mother of the devatas, see that the devatas are known as the Adityas, because they are sons of Aditi. So the mother of the devatas was very, very, very morose, very depressed, very sad. So she started neglecting her ashram. She was the wife of Kashyapa Muni. And when Kashyapa Muni came back from certain, thank you, from certain austerities he was doing in the forest, we came back to the ashram, and he saw the ashram was in disarray, was dirty, was not flourishing like before. And then he asked, what's the matter? And she said, I'm very sad because I cannot see my son Indra. They all escaped. And so Kashyapa Muni preached to his wife, and he told him about the nature of the soul, the nature of time, the nature of karma. But somehow she was not totally satisfied with that philosophy. She still wanted to see again his her children. So then Kashyapa Muni said, well, okay, the only thing you could do is to invoke the presence of Vishnu. Because nobody else in the universe can actually do anything. And Kashyapa Muni gave a special process. It's called the Payo Vrata. Vrata means vow. A special process that it's completed in 12 days. There's a long, detailed description. And Aditi very faithfully, very loyally practiced this Payo Vrata, and as a result, the Lord was pleased. And the Lord appeared in front of her with the full regalia, Vishnu, four arms, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma, Kanshal, Sudarshan Chakra disc, lotus flower, mace, and with his usual yellow garments, decoration, helmet, Srivatsa, Kaustubha, garland, everything. And he said that he was very happy, and he agreed to become her son. So after some time, he entered the body of Kashyapa Muni, and from the body of Kashyapa Muni, he was transferred into the body of Aditi. And the auspicious time, very auspicious time actually, the Lord appeared. And there are many parallels within the appearance of Vamanadeva and the appearance of Krishna, which we recently celebrated, Jamastami. One parallel is that all the directions, the rivers, the mountains, the mind of people was full of peace and harmony. There was this very, very, very auspicious and positive atmosphere. It's described that at that time there was happiness in all directions. The various seasons displayed the respective qualities, and all living entities in the upper planetary system, in outer space, and on the surface of the earth were jubilant. So there was this surge of joy and happiness simultaneously everywhere. And it is described that the Lord appeared on Dvadasi, the 12th day of the moon. And every learned scholar knows this Dvadasi as Vijaya Dvadasi. And the Lord, again, just like in the appearance of Krishna, did not appear directly as a Brahmana, as a Vamana, as a dwarf Brahmachari. He appeared as Vishnu, again. He appeared as Vishnu. And he described the usual description of the Vishnu form. Then, what happened, there was a great celebration. Everybody started glorifying the Lord. It is described, there were conchal, drums, different types of instruments. The celestial dancing girls, the apsaras, started doing different performances. The gandharvas started glorifying the Lord in choice singing. And then there is a list of all these personalities who was attending this appearance, the great sages, the demigods, the manus, the pitas, the fire gods, they all offer prayers. And there were a lot of species, like the siddhas, vidyadharas, kimpurushas, kinnaras, charana, yakshas, rakshasas, suparnas, the best of serpents, and the followers of the demigods all shower flowers on Aditi's residence, covering the entire house. Sometimes there are movies like Star Wars or The Lord of the Rings, in which we see different types of species interacting. But this is real. I mean, a lot of that is like imagination. But this is the original archetype of universal interaction. These are actually different species. Serpents, suparnas. Suparnas are these special birds, apparently. And everybody cooperated in Krishna consciousness. Then what happened? Then, in the presence of his father and mother, the Lord assumed the form of Vamana, a Brahmana dwarf, a Brahmachari, just like a theatrical actor. Theatrical actor, of course, can assume any form, any role. A good actor can be the hero one day, the villain another day. So the Lord is obviously the supreme actor. Generally, he appears as Kshatriya, like in the case of Krishna. He appeared in the Yadu dynasty in the royal order. Or sometimes as Brahmana, like Lord Chaitanya, Nityananda, Advaita Acharya, Gadadhar Pandit, and so on. Shivastakur, they're all Brahmanas. So, you see this shift. Vishnu is more in the mood of a king. He has these weapons, he has this crown, and he has all these decorations, typically of a king, of a kshatriya, divine kshatriya. But then in front of the parents, he just transformed himself in a small little brahmachari brahmana. And then all these demigods started relating to him as a brahmachari brahmana. And so it is described how everyone contributed to these ritualistic ceremonies. First of all, they did the birthday ceremony, the Jata Karma. And then different demigods came forward, demigods and other great personalities, sages, came forward and gave special gifts. Many of you remember when in the fourth canto, Maharaj Prithu appears, something similar happens. The different demigods offer different gifts. But those gifts were proper for a king. So he received a sword, he received a shield, all like martial symbols and weapons. But in this case, because the Lord appeared as a brahmachari, the gifts are appropriate for a brahmachari. Now, this is a Vedic brahmachari. We will see how brahmacharis nowadays, they don't wear the same style of clothing or the same type of accessories. Huh? But these are the standard attire of a brahmachari. It's also described in the seventh canto by Narada Muni. So let's see. It's very interesting also because in some cases obvious how the person who gives the gifts and the gifts are somewhat related to their role. That there is some connection. For instance, at the sacred thread ceremony of Vamanadev, the sun god personally uttered the Gayatri mantra. And this is very interesting because the Gayatri mantra is a mantra to the sun god. It's a mantra to Surya. So in this circumstance you have Surya Dev, who is the object of the mantra, who gives the mantra to Vamanadev. This is it's called the Upavita, basically when the brahmachari, the young brahmachari, child brahmachari starts the education, he gets also the Brahmin thread. We generally, because most of us are, sociologically speaking, we are new converts. We join not at birth, not when we were 5. We didn't go through Vidyaramba. Vidyaramba means the beginning of education. I mean, we went through some sort of education, but not the Vedic ceremonies. So we received the Brahmin thread or the Gayatri mantra generally quite late. I mean, I don't know your personal history. In the Manusamhita, technically said that you cannot get the Upavita beyond 16 years of age. Technically, according to the Vedic system. But we don't follow that, we follow the Pancharatrik system. So, even latecomers are welcome. I don't know what age you got your Gayatri mantra. I was certainly more than 16. But here, apparently, there's no description, there's that much time. It looks like everything, I cannot be sure, but it looks like everything is happening at the same time. He appears as Vishnu, he turns into a brahmachari, and then everybody starts giving the gifts or performing these ritualistic ceremonies. Then, Brihaspati offered the sacred thread. Brihaspati is the priest of the devatas. He's the priest of Indra, actually. And so he himself gave the Brahmin thread. In our culture, is the guru who gives the Brahmin thread at the time of sacred initiation. In India, it's very common that the father gives the Brahmin thread, gives the what's called upavita, the sacred thread. This one. So that Brihaspati himself gave. Then Kashyapa Muni offered a straw belt. These are very simple things for brahmachari. So there's no, you see, there's no gold, there's no jewels, there's no diamonds, there's no, because again, brahmachari is supposed to be very, very, very simple. In fact, you see this scene in the cover. That's the cover of the eighth canto. You see Vamanadev, and you see everybody is kind of dressing him up. And in the sides, you see different sages, different goddesses. Many of you are familiar with this cover. You can pass it around if you want, because it's a Slovenian. Thank you. Then, Mother Earth, Bhumi Devi, gave him a deer skin. They were wearing deer skin. Then the demigod of the moon, who is the king of the forest, gave him a Brahmadanda, the rod of a brahmachari. The brahmachari used to have sticks. Once I heard a story that Srila Prabhupada apparently suggested that our children in Gurukula also have sticks. But then he heard that they started beating the teachers with the sticks, so he stopped the practice. So, again, Chandradev is the lord of the forest, so the stick is a product of the forest, so he gives the stick. His mother gave him clothes for underwear. Kopin, in Sanskrit, is kopin. It's a very important element for a brahmachari, because there are many types of underwear, but the brahmachari wears kopins. And because they also help in sense control. Not just any underwear. So in English it's called loin clothes. I think many of you are familiar with the notion. Then, his mother... she gave the copies. Deity presiding over the heavenly kingdom offered him an umbrella. This is one of the trademarks of Vamanadeva. You see also the deity on the altar. He has these umbrellas. Generally, is represented not as an umbrella like we have nowadays for the rain. Now that you open it like that, it's generally made of bamboo, like that. It's traditional, organic, vegan. Then, Lord Brahma gave him a water pot. You can see the water pot also, Kamandalu, carry water. And then, the seven sages offered him Kusha grass. The Kusha grass is mentioned many times in the Bhagavatam, is this very auspicious grass, which is used for sacrifice, is used for mats that you sit for doing sacrifice. So, it's like one of the essential ingredients, one of the essential tools for Brahmana Brahmachari. Mother Sarasvati gave him a string of Rudraksha beads. This is interesting because Mother Sarasvati is the goddess of learning. And this, it connects because in Vedic culture, learning is not just learning knowledge, but also practicing mantras that purifies consciousness, that increase the capacity of the mind to imbibe knowledge. It's not just the information, but also creating the situation in which the mind can actually absorb that information. So Saraswati Devi gives Rudraksha Mala to Vamanadeva. And then, After being given the sacred thread, Kuvera, the king of the Yaksha, gave him a pot for begging alms. So this is also corresponding because Kuvera is the treasurer of the demigods. So he deals with money. So to collect alms, to collect donation, he gives a pot, a bowl. Like nowadays, even nowadays in Thailand, all the Buddhist monks have the little bowl and they go around asking for alms. It's described in the Manu Samhita how when the brahmachari goes to beg, they have this mantra, no bhiksham dehi, giving me, bhiksham means donation or give the alms. Thank you. And so it is described in the Manu Samhita, there is this whole culture of if you are a Vaishya, you use the word the first and the other word second, so kind of to give the information where you're coming from to the person you beg. If you are a Kshatriya, if you are a Brahmana, like that. There is the whole culture. In fact, begging alms is an essential element of building character because... it makes somebody very humble. when you ask on behalf of the guru, you have nothing, you go, please, bhikshandehi, give me some alms. And then, Bhagavati, the wife of Lord Shiva, a most chaste mother of the entire universe, gave him the first alms. She's the goddess of material nature, she's Durga Devi, and so she has everything. So she gives first alms. I'm not exactly describe what she gives, but probably some rice or something like that. And then Vamana Deva at this point starts manifesting this effulgence. He said it's Brahman effulgence. He gets all these gifts, he gets all this, he does the ceremony, he's ready to go, and at this point he started emanating a luminosity, very, very, very intense. And it is said that he surpassed in beauty that entire assembly. In fact, Srila Prabhupada in the book Teachings of Lord Chaitanya explains that there are three avatars, especially beautiful. One is Lord Balaram. No? White skin like snow, very, very, very beautiful. The second is Mohini Murti. So beautiful, he captivates everybody's mind, including Lord Shiva. And the third one is Vamana Deva. So this is one particular characteristic of Vamana Deva. This extraordinary beauty, extraordinary attractiveness. This luminosity, this brilliance, this ojas. Okay, then, so this is actually the birth of Vamana Deva. This is actually the birth. Then there is the old pastime of how he fulfills the desires of the demigods. Any of you has never heard how Vamana Deva fulfills the desires of the demigods? Anybody has never heard it? Everybody knows the story, right? Of the three steps. So, very shortly, he goes to the sacrifice where Bali Maharaj was on the banks of the Narmada River. And these descendants of Brigus were doing all this sacrifice. So the atmosphere was very solemn, very, very serious. And then when Bali Maharaj sees this brahmachari, he looks at him and super attractive. Bali Maharaj is a great devotee, although he was the king of the demons. And this is another aspect of this pastime of Vamana Deva. There is a play of parts. There is a play of roles. Although Indra officially is a devotee, basically, apparently, he just wanted his kingdom back. But Bali Maharaj actually, first of all, he interacts much more with Vamana Deva, and then we'll see a little later how he actually gets special blessings, although he was the king of the demons. So, he offers some charity. Very generous. Kshatriyas were generous. You can ask me anything. And Vamana Deva asks for 3 steps of land. 3 steps of land is the standard measurement to lay down and rest. If you take 3 steps, 1, 2, 3, you have enough space to go down and sleep. So basically the bare necessity to sleep. And Bali Maharaj was not happy. He says, well, I can give you everything. I can give you lands, extensive gold. I can even arrange your marriage if you need some nice princesses or something. I can arrange that. He's the king of the universe. So why don't ask for more? And then Vamana Deva said, look, actually, you know, if somebody is not satisfied with the bare necessities of life, he will never be satisfied, no matter what. So then, at this point, Shukracharya who is extremely powerful mystic. In fact, Shukracharya is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter when Krishna describes all the opulences. He says that among the great thinkers, I am Shukracharya. I may not be famous as a devotee, but he's a great thinker. He knows how to use the brain. So he understood this is Vishnu. He got the realization. This is not just any brahmachari walking by. He is Vishnu. And what he will do, he will snatch away everything. And you, Bali Maharaj, you will lose everything. So don't do it. But Bali Maharaj had this very strong value on keeping his word. He promised. He said, I'll give whatever you want. Whatever charity you want, I'll give you. So he had promised. And then Shukracharya really tried to stop. He tried to preach to him. He said, look, there are certain cases in which lying is okay. He gave the example, if you have to protect somebody else's life. Say, for instance, you have a friend and somebody is looking for the friend to kill him. Say, where is he? You can say, well, I don't know, actually. You know very well where is he. But you say, well, I don't know. So in those cases, it's dharmi. He even says, sometime in a marriage ceremony, you can lie about the beauty of the bride. Because it's her day. Come on, one day in life. So she's so beautiful. Inside you think, my God, it's like I'm lucky I'm not marry her. But you can say something nice. Those in English are called white lies. Because then they don't have negative consequences, you know? It's just to create a nice atmosphere or to do something beneficial. So then Bali Maharaj started really thinking, should I stop this charity? And he thought very deeply and he considered and he said, no, I'd rather lose everything but keep my reputation. I don't care. I prefer to be known as a person of his word than keep this material thing. And so he said, okay, go ahead. Yeah, you have your three steps. And then you all know what happened. Then Bhavamana Dev started expanding his body. He manifested like a universal form. At one point, Bali Maharaj could see everything inside his form. And then he assumed this Vishnu form, again, with these four arms. Basically, you know, in Vamana Dev Leela, he goes back and forth, not being Vishnu and being Brahmana, like that. And then he covered, he stood on the earth, his whole body conquered the whole sky, and then with the second step, he conquered all the heavenly planets, he even pierced the layer of the universe, and in fact the water of the Karana ocean, causal ocean, filtered down and it became the Ganga. So Vamanadeva is also connected to the Ganga. So we could say, I don't know if it's today, the birth of the Ganga, but anyway, it's related to Vamanadeva. And at the end of all this huge expansion, he said, okay, you promised me three steps, but I took two and there's nothing left. So you have to be punished because you gave a false promise. He really, really squashed his ego, whatever ego was left, you know. He really humiliated him in front of everybody. The person is offering everything and they say, no, you gave me only two steps, where is the third? So you have to go to hell. He says, you have to go to hell. For some time, yeah, you have to go to hell. And then Garuda Deva, is intimate devotee of the Lord, a carrier eagle, he understands the mind of Vamanadeva, he understands there's a plan, he puts the Varuna ropes, and he arrests Bali Maharaj. So in one moment he was the king of the universe, next moment he's a prisoner, all tied up like this. And then the demons, they can't take it. The demons, they can't take it. That this is too much. You know, this is our king. You're humiliating. You cheated him. You told you came as a brahmachari, all innocent, you know. And then you took everything away, and now you arrest him. And then they started attacking. We should kill this Vishnu. We should kill him. And then what happened? Then the associate of Vishnu comes. The Sunanda, Nanda, all the associates of the spiritual world. They come and they start chopping these demons into pieces. In fact, it is said in the Bhagavatam, when the demons attacked, all these associates, they just started smiling. Like, seriously? Like, really? You want to try that? Okay. I mean, these are the associates of Narayana. They are invincible, insurmountable, invulnerable. You can't kill them. They are unkillable, you know. they can't kill them, you know. And so the demons really got beaten up. And then Bali Maharaj told them, no, stop. But they didn't stop because they were passionate, you know. They're demons. And then finally they get out of there and they go into the lower planet. They lost. They were enjoying the heavenly planets and they lost everything. So then a lot of things happen. See, if this was a drama, there would be a lot of characters coming on the stage. A lot of people coming, you know. At one point, Prahlad Maharaj shows up. Why? Because he's actually the grandfather of Bali. See, Prahlad Maharaj is the father of Virochan and Virochan is the father of Bali. So he had some very good DNA too. So Prahlad Maharaj comes, he said very elegant, very tall, completely black complexion. And he starts praying, please release him, poor guy, you know. And then the Brahma starts speaking, Brahma comes, starts speaking. And then while Brahma starts speaking, the wife of Bali Maharaj comes and starts speaking before Brahma. It was a kind of a tense situation. No? There's a lot of emotion. So Vindhyavali, the wife of Bali Maharaj starts praying, please Vishnu, release him. So also Brahma starts saying, please release him. So everybody starts interceding for Bali Maharaj. So at one point, Vamanadev starts saying, okay, look, you will become Indra next Manvantara. Savarni Manu. You will become the Savarni Manu. There are 14 Manus in the day of Brahma. Each Manu reigns for roughly 306 million earthly years. So, more than 300 million years. Every 300 million years, there's this change. Indra change, the seven sages change, Manus change. So Bali Maharaj will be the next Manu. Now is Vaivashvata Manu, son of Vivashvan. And next Manu will be Bali Maharaj. So he said, you will become the Manu next Manvantara, next age of Manu. For now, I give you Sutala. Sutala is a special place. It's a special planet. It was made personally by Vishwakarma. It is said that it's hundreds of times better than Indraloka. I mean, Indraloka is already, 7 stars, no? Or maybe 75 stars. I mean, by human calculation, it must be like 300... 1,000 stars, I don't know, I mean, if you calculate, hotels, 5, it's really good. But Sutala is hundreds of times better. It's kind of hard to imagine. It said nobody can feel hunger, nobody can feel thirst, nobody can feel fatigue. It's like almost a spiritual planet. It's like a super heavenly plan. And you will rule the demons. So apparently also the demons get to go to Sutala. It's a good deal. Because they were really, really sad. They lost Indra Loka. But they get something really better. And he says, Vamanadeva says, look, you will rule the demons. And if they don't obey, personally, my Sudarshan Chakra will punish them. So no opposition in parliament. And then he said, and this is dulcis in fundo, as the Latin used to say. They use this word, dulcis in fundo, the sweet at the end. Dulcis in fundo. So, and then Vamanadeva said, and I will personally come and live there with you. And I will be your guardian. I'll be your custodian. I just live with you. So, a planet where Krishna is there is basically a spiritual planet. It's a Vaikuntha planet. So, Bali Maharaj, basically, although he had some very, very hard few minutes, he gets more than what he did. And he becomes the 12 Mahajan, or the 12 authorities, and he becomes the personification of the devotional service of Atma Nivedana, full surrender. Because, I forgot to say, at one point, Bali Maharaj says, look, yeah, it's true, I didn't fulfill my promise, I don't have any more land left, but I have my head. And so please put your third step on my head. And he completely surrendered. So he was blessed. And he's still blessed. So this is the summary description of the appearance of Vamanadeva. We need to finish at 8 sharp. No? Hmm. 3 minutes more. Whose minutes you have to say? Of course, you also are familiar here in Slovenia. There was a campaign for the Vamanadeva approach, the three steps, congregational development. How many of you heard about the Vamanadeva approach in congregational development? Very popular, I can see. And basically the idea is that it's called also the 3C. The idea is that in our propagating Krishna consciousness, there are three basic phases. We get in contact with people, contact. And by contact, we mean not only just getting contact, like they see Harinam or something like that, but we can contact them again. We get their email or their WhatsApp, some sort of address that we can actually contact them. And then there is a process of cultivation. We build a relation with them. We can invite them, or we can ask them to invite us at their place. We cultivate the relation, cultivate their interest, nourish them, equip them with more information. And then third, there is the third C, no? C for contact. That's a C for... in fact, this is an idea developed by Abhinandan Nitai Prabhu. And then a Japanese artist, Keshavi Mataji, made this this poster. How many of you saw this poster before? Extremely popular, I mean. okay, well, it means that you had to learn about it the day of Vamanadeva, what can I say? So, first contact. Then C for close, but that's not part of the process. Then you have the contact, cultivation, and care, sometimes also called commitment. In other words, when they start becoming regular members of our groups or regular visitors, then we care for them. they accept our association, they start being identified with our community. So the third C is also meaning commitment. They commit to practice spiritual life. So you can study this poster. Next time I come, there will be an examination. At least you have to tell me the three C's, okay? Contact, cultivation, and care or commitment. Okay? Like that. So, today is also appearance day of Jiva Goswami. But, go on. Do you want to speak a few minutes about Jiva Goswami? I mean, Jiva Goswami is a giant of bhakti, of philosophy. Sometimes it is said there was never a scholar like Jiva Goswami, and there will never be a scholar like Jiva Goswami. He was a super genius. It is said, I heard the story, that he was writing on palm leaves, because at the time, 500 years ago, there was no paper. And so there were these palm leaves, and they were using this type of pen that you hold like this, you write Sanskrit. And when you write on palm leaves, because this ink is sort of liquid, then you got to wait for the ink to dry. You cannot just turn the page. No, otherwise you splatter the ink on the table. So it is said that he was so clear-minded, he was so intelligent, that basically he was like a computer. He would write page number one, then put it to dry, and write page number three, and put it to dry. And then go back to page number two, write page number two, and then write page number four. It's like a computer, no? Like a computer, you can print all the odd pages and the even pages, and it's in memory, no? You have the document. So he was like a computer. He knew so clearly. I remember once a Madhva, not a good year, a Madhva Brahmins, they say very highly scholar. He was saying how he would enjoy reading Jiva Goswami books. And he would say, look, other books, no, Ramanuja, even Madhva, he's a Madhva, but he said, even Madhvacharya, their Sanskrit, you could misunderstand. In other words, you could misinterpret. But Jiva Goswami's Sanskrit, you cannot misunderstand what you say. It's like, it's super crystal clear what he wants to say. And he wrote 25 works, and some works are very big. He wrote two commentaries on the Bhagavad. One is called Krama Sandarbha. Krama means step, like Trivikrama, three steps, Urukrama, great steps, Urukrama, your brother. What I was saying? The first one is Krama Sandarbha. Krama means step, so it's sequential. Like Srila Prabhupada Bhagavatam. It goes from first canto, it goes all the way through. Krama. Step by step, as the book goes, you write a commentary. But then he wrote this Sandarbhas. That's the most famous books of Jiva Goswami. It's, Sandarbhas, it's a treatise on the Bhagavatam, but it doesn't go sequentially. It goes by topic. So he divides the whole work in the three main branches of knowledge: Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. You're familiar, right? No? First, Sambandha Jnana, the knowledge about reality, the elements of reality, translated as relation. And he wrote four Sandarbha, four books, because the nature of reality is very confusing in philosophy. So many people say so many things. So the first Sandarbha is Tattva Sandarbha. Tattva, the truth, the nature of things, and is divided into two. Pramana and Prameya. First of all, what is the source of knowledge? And he starts by saying, he explains all the type of knowledge, and he concludes that the Shabda is the highest. And then he goes through all the Shabda, the Vedas, the Upanishad, the Mahabharata, the Purana, and he concludes and explains, and he determines that Bhagavatam is the highest source of knowledge. You can't get higher knowledge than the Bhagavatam. And then, in the second part of the Tattva Sandarbha, he describes what's in the Bhagavad. And he uses a very interesting technique. He goes to the heart of the speakers. Because he says, what's in their heart will be in the Bhagavad. So he goes at the heart of Vyasadeva, at the heart of Sutta Goswami, at the heart of Sukadeva Goswami. So he established that the Bhagavad only talks about bhakti. Then second, Bhagavat Sandarbha means basically a treatise on God, the nature of God, in general. So he talks about Vaikuntha, he talks about Vishnu, he talks about the weapons of Vishnu are none different than Vishnu, like God, theology. Then the third one, Paramatma Sandarbha. How the form of God is localized in the universe, how he permeates and pervades the cosmos. And then fourth, Krishna Sandarbha. And Krishna Sandarbha is like a firework of scholarship. Sometimes it's considered like already the Sandarbha is super scholarly, but Krishna Sandarbha is like, wow, you know, because he establishes that all the forms of God, Krishna's form is the original. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. And he addresses all the doubts, and because so many people in India say, no, Vishnu is original, Krishna and this and that. So Krishna Sandarbha, it's all about Krishna. It establishes that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of God. Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamam Bhajami. Then, so this is the Sambandha Gyan, four books. Then he goes into Bhakti Sandarbha, the process of bhakti. And he gets into very, very detail. He goes to like how aparads affect the psyche of people. How when you do aparad, you get twisted. Your mind becomes twisted. Very deep, 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 deep description. Then it goes all the way to the gopis, the mood, and so on and so forth. And then, six Sandarbhas, then it's Priti Sandarbha, Priti Prema, Priti, Sandarbha of love, Prayojana, the perfection, and it describes all the types of pure love for Krishna. So these are six books, they're actually translated into English, Banu Maharaj and others also produced it. So this is the most famous books. And there are so many other books. There's one book is called Gopal Champu. This is also in English. Gopal Champu is a book of all the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. And the book has got 30,000 verses. The Bhagavatam has got 18,000 verses. Gopal Champu, 30,000 verses. So he produced a huge amount of literature. And he apparently, I mean, we could talk about Jiva Goswami a lot, but I don't know how much you want to talk more. I don't know. I don't want to talk more. But see, one thing, it is said that actually Jiva Goswami saw Lord Chaitanya. Bashir Bhaktivinoda Thakur says he saw Lord Chaitanya. Tomorrow is Bhaktivinoda Thakur appearance. Bashir Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he said he saw Lord Chaitanya. Apparently, Jiva Goswami was 1 year old. But of course, 1 year old for Jiva Goswami is like a 35-year-old with 3 PhD for a normal person. So, and he was totally, besides being a scholar, generally when you think of scholar, we think of intellectuals, a little dry and so, but he was completely in love with Lord Chaitanya. He was crying all the time. He was totally absorbed in this mellow of separation from Lord Chaitanya. He was a direct disciple of his uncle, Rupa Goswami. He established this school, and all the big Bengali Gaudiya Vaishnavas would send their disciples to Jiva Goswami in Vrindavan. So, so there's some prasad. So you will now honor prasad. In honor of Vamanadev and Srila Jiva Goswami. So, with the permission of Ananta Prabhu, given long time ago, about 3 seconds, I have some books with me. I will not talk about these books. We are talking about the Bhagavatam. We are talking about Jiva Goswami. So, I'm not going to talk about this book. But this book is an underground classic in ISKCON. It's called Did Srila Prabhupada Want Women Diksha Gurus? I won't talk about the book. If you're interested, a few copies. It's a free donation, whatever you want to give. And you can take a copy home. That's all. So, thank you very much for your attention, your patience. Jai.